Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
This is Jerry Pippin, and we are at the end of the Ozarks in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. Springtime, except not here. It's a little cool. Wendell, how are you?
Oh, just fine.
This is Wendell Stevens, our guest, and it's always good to have you on. Wendell, I was trying to count the number of books you wrote the other day. I it seems to me it's up in the 70s.
No, 51.
51. Well, that's still that's an unbelievable amount. Are you writing anything right now?
Putting things together. You know, I don't write books. I don't sit down and write a book. And they're not well written. They don't have an introduction, a build-up to a climax, and a close. They're narrative reports like I used to write military reports, where you have to put everything in the report. You don't hold anything back.
And of course, you had quite a military career, and we talked about that, and you didn't see a UFO until you got out.
Yes, right, yeah.
And you spent a little time at Wright Field, which is Wright-Patterson now.
Yes,
right?
Early on I was there in the flight test division.
Yeah. Well, now, what did you talk about this time here at the conference?
I talked about an event that happened way back in the 50s, late 50s, when I was assigned to George Air Force Base at Victorville, California. And I went there for a new assignment as commander of the repair squadron in a fighter wing. And in my first meeting with my staff people in the new squadron, a warrant officer that was in charge of the electronics shop came up to me that evening, said, I hear you're interested in UFOs. I said, oh, yes, I am. He said, well, I have a little gathering, a group that gathers at my home on Friday nights occasionally. And if you'd like to come by, we're going to be meeting this Friday weekend, Friday evening. You're welcome. I said, oh, I'd love to. And I went by, and I found that their channel was Richard Miller. And I had never heard of Richard Miller. I didn't know anything about him at all. He was a young man that had an experience early in his teens. Mm-hmm. And he was working in electronics up in the Detroit area, and he hunted for discussion groups because he was trying to get more information on his own sighting earlier. And he had been invited to an elderly home where a group of people had pooled resources, bought a ticket for George Hunt Williamson to come in from Prescott, Arizona, and demonstrate his channeling of the Space Brothers. And Richard was there that night. He worked all day, and he was tired, and he leaned against the piano leg. Well, there wasn't enough chairs for everybody, so he left the chairs for the older people and just sat down leaning against the piano leg. And as the conversation went on, they were drinking coffee and talking. He got a little more tired, and he leaned back under the piano, and then he laid down on his back. When they got through, the older folks got through talking over their donuts, and George Hunt Williamson lay down on the sofa to do his thing. He took his three deep breaths, and his body jerked, and the Space Brothers came through. At the same time, Richard Miller, laying on the floor under the piano, jerked, and the same voice came through him. And now we had a transmission in stereo coming through two different mouths, the same voice, the same communication, same words and everything.
So they're channeling.
They were channeling, simultaneously channeling the same entity.
Okay.
Which was a remarkable thing. It astounded me. So after that, the elderly folks tried to get Richard to do it again, and he couldn't do it for a number of tries. And then finally he got a breakthrough, and he did do it again. And he told the Space Brothers that he didn't remember anything about the earlier one when he channeled. He was completely out. And after it was over and there was a commotion around him, we woke him up. He said, when is he going to start? They said, he's already started and he's over with and you were in it. Well, so now he's trying to put himself in the same frame of mind he was in then. Mm-hmm. He finally succeeded, made a deal with the Solar Cross Brothers. If they would let him, he would continue channeling if they would let him set aside and remember everything that transpired. So they did. He said that it was kind of like they would move in, set him aside in his head and take over the motor forces and do the channeling. And he could watch and see everything that they were doing.
So here he was having kind of an out-of-body experience watching it.
But in-body, yeah.
Yeah, right.
So then after that, they did this, and he could see what was happening and hear the conversation himself as it was transpiring. When they were through, they would move back out and let him put him back in charge again. And he did that for a long time. He became a better channel for the space, for the Solar Cross brothers than George Hunt Williamson. And that's when I first heard him that night in that officer's house in my squadron. And that was, it was mind blowing at the time because I had never seen anything that clear, loud, and
you know, that's a long time back, and I just think of channeling in the last couple of decades, but I guess it's been around for a while.
Oh, yeah, it's been around forever, I guess.
Evidently.
Yeah.
Well, tell me a little bit about what was said in this thing that you...
Well,
you
among other things, the Solar Cross brothers, and one evening they told us, advised us to collect a number of Light Classics records on the old 33 RPM discs, platters, and they gave us about 15 titles, including Rites of Spring, Thus Spake Zarathustra, Tales from the Vienna Woods, Scheherazade, 1812 Overture. All those are Light Classics with no words. And so we collected, we finally got close to a dozen of them, and they were on a table one night for in another session when the Solar Cross speaker at the time observed that we may have enough, they would see what they could do. And then they gave us a list of about 100 or more clips to take from these records in a very specific order. And we didn't know anything about music.
You're talking about the selections themselves.
Yeah, out of the stack of records
right.
on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't know anything about music, didn't know how to take the clips out, but one of the sitters knew a sound shop in Hollywood that might be interested in. And so they took them down, the clips down there, the records and the list of clips.
Right.
Sound shop took them out nice and clean and put them together, and they brought it back up on a wire recorder. And we thought the Space Brothers were simply giving us a new medley of our old classics. And we were going to listen to it at the end of that session and hear the new medley. When, before the session ended, one of the speakers said, "Our brother, we have a surprise for you this evening. Our brother Monka will speak, and he will call for your music when he's ready." And then Monka's voice came on, and he said, "You may now start the music." And we started it, and he gave us a clean narrative for 47 minutes, perfectly coordinated to the music, perfectly timed, and with no speech defects whatever. Toastmasters rate a member of the club if they can do it for 5 minutes. They rate them and give them a standing. This was for 47 minutes. Now, during this time, Richard Miller was sitting there in a straight back chair at a table with his hands flat on the table in front of him, looking straight forward in a kind of a semi-trance. His eyes were about half closed. And he did this presentation in a lot of very specific language with no prompts at all, no cards, no notes, no nothing. And he didn't even turn his head, and he didn't look around. He was straight ahead, and he delivered it with no paused words like I'm doing, no mispronunciations, everything perfectly delivered for 47 minutes. That's something a human being cannot do. And this was done by an alien entity through a stranger using his vocal cords and giving a speech delivery with a lot of very complicated information in it.
Perfectly. What sort of information do you remember?
It was in that particular first one they were describing a solar tour. They said, "We would like to tell you what you would see if you were aboard one of our ships taking a tour of your solar system." And they started from the sun and went out through all the planets, described the life existing on each one, and all but two actually had life on them. They said that there's life throughout our solar system, different forms, it's different, adapted to its own conditions, but still life there. And one of the interesting things, they said that the true origin of Earth's life was Jupiter.
Oh, really?
And we see, our astronomers see Jupiter as a gaseous body with a very, so big that the acceleration of gravity to the surface is unbelievable.
Yeah, we weigh 2,000 pounds or more instead of 100.
But the life form there, the Space Brothers told us there is a solid surface under that gas level.
Okay.
And the solid surface does have a population, and they're happy there. They have a society and living there. And the life form from Jupiter was transported to Earth when Earth was ready for intelligent life. And it has evolved here since. But that they kept insisting that's our true origin of life on Earth.
Do you remember which two planets didn't have life?
Yeah, Pluto was one that had no native life. And I think it was Uranus has no native life, but it has a very prolific animal life and vegetation. Beings from other planets in the solar system go there for vacations. Those advanced beings that are able to make that trip and go there for vacations and enjoy the lakes and the rivers and the streams and the wildlife on that planet.
So when we talk about the life, I just saw an article this week, Life of Mars again, and laying out some artifacts and things. That doesn't surprise you.
Doesn't surprise me at all. Our communicator, the main communicator, the one that did this transmission, the solar tour, was Manka, who claims he comes from Mars, that Mars is inhabited, that the inhabitants live below the surface in manufactured cities, that they manufacture their own air and water, that they have an industrial society that is mechanized, that builds spaceships for some of the other planets. They say that Venus has no technical society, that the Martians build the spacecraft for the Venusians. And I found that interesting because that had come out in other contacts involving Venusians.
Well, what do you make of the thing we're told about Venus being so hot nobody could be there?
Well, that's what we see with our physical eyes.
Uh-huh.
And that's the physical chemical level of Venus. If we went there, that's what we would see, and that's what we see with our instruments too. But if we went there as a Venusian, we would find that the life wave lives at a different level. They don't live at the level we see with our physical eyes. They live at a level above that.
And so are you talking about other dimensions?
Or a higher dimensional
level.
And they, at their dimensional level where they live, they have trees and rivers and lakes and streams and flowers and plants, clouds in the sky and everything else like we have here, but it's of an other dimensional reality.
Yeah, I guess what you're saying is it's another reality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's not so far out from ours that the Venusians can't slow their vibrations down and interact with us physically and then speed them up again to their natural rate. They can do this mentally for a short time, like up to a half hour, but usually when we see them, they wear a little device on their belt that generates a field around them that slows their vibrations down. So they look physical when they're interacting with us. In the dark at night, they have a glow, but that's the field around them that's keeping them slowed down into the physical realm.
So when we talk about, and you and I talked about, the numbers of species many times, and they seem to be quite a few.
Infinite.
We're really talking about other worlds, other dimensions, other realities, too.
Many other realities. Okay. It's like your radio has a lot of radio stations on it. Our solar system has a lot of different vibrational frequencies of being in this solar system and in other solar systems. You know, at my age of 84 now, I've come to the conclusion that space is the true habitat of humanity. That planets are nothing more than nests, incubation nests, where humanity is transported. They begin gathering their experience in their new vibrational nature, and they evolve a technology and produce spacecraft and eventually leave the planet never to return, like birds leaving the nest.
It's an interesting concept, and you've studied this subject for a long time, so I'm
60
I'm not,
years.
Yeah, I'm not going to debate you over that at all. We're talking with Wendell Stevens, and what you have some DVDs out now or CDs or something?
I had some CDs that were channeled transmissions. Actually, the solar tour was only the first one, and then we got 10 more, so we had 11 such transmissions, perfectly coordinated to music. Besides the solar tour, which I presented here, there's a galactic tour. There's another one that describes the destruction of Maldek, the missing planet.
So when we listen to this CD, we hear the clips of the music and someone talking.
Perfectly coordinated to the music, yes.
And who recorded those, Richard?
We recorded them as a group sitting around Richard Miller, and I bought an expensive cassette recorder and made copies more myself at the time. And I was going through my stuff a couple of months ago, and I thought, discovered them again. And I thought, oh, those might be interesting to other people now. So I made copies on CDs, which wasn't too hard to do, and now they're available again on CD.
Fantastic. They can contact you and order these things,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay, and we'll give that address and everything when we come back. This is Jerry Pippin. We're broadcasting from the end of the Ozarks. And Wendell Stevens, one of my favorite people. In fact, he's the first guy I ever heard on an interview. I don't remember whose interview it was. He said, I need to talk to this guy. This is a long time ago.
I'll be darned.
Yeah, a lot of shows.
Yeah.
We'll be back. I'm Jerry Pippin.
The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers. UFO and alien disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime. Anywhere. Fast Walkers now available on DVD for only $19.95 at ShopJerryPippin.com.
Wendell Stevens is our guest, and we're talking about some tapes that you made many years ago. You found recently, a couple of months ago, and you made a presentation here. And if people listening to the first segment, they're well aware what we're talking about. What other things are you doing right now? You said you don't write a book like sitting down and creating a plot or whatever.
No, I collect information, and I make memorandums to myself. Sometimes they run 10 or 15 pages, some of them even longer. And then when the file gets a couple inches thick, a couple hundred pages,
for a book.
Then I think somebody else might like to know something about this. So I take the file of memorandums to myself out and write connecting paragraphs. Connecting narrative, and just put them all together. So I'm not really writing a book. I'm just reporting, and I report in a military sense where I gave all the facts, everything, name, days, plate, time, and everything. You know, it used to upset me to buy a book and get a story of a case in one paragraph, and then it'll go on to another paragraph and a capsule of another story. Not enough details, no true names, nothing to follow up on. I put everything out there so anybody that wants to do so can go look the person up. His address, his telephone numbers, everything is in my reports. Now they're older, so many of them have moved on, but I started out trying to report stuff that other people could check for and verify for themselves.
And now when we talk about all of these reports that you've done, these books, 50-some books or reports, which turned out to be books, do you have any that are really are your favorites? In other words, do they have? I know when we do research, each project we kind of fall in love with while we're doing it. But looking back over the years, what are some of your favorite cases?
Well, I like the Reticulum case that began with a born again Christian back in South Carolina, in where they have the blue laws. Movie theaters don't even open on Sundays,
right.
And grocery stores don't open either, just convenience markets. And the witness was a born-again Christian that had a military academy education. He did not have a high level of education. He married his buddy's sister, and they had a little family, lived in a trailer, but he would have laughed at anybody trying to tell him a UFO story. He never wouldn't read it in the papers. He didn't buy any magazines. He didn't look at any books. He thought it was all really bunk. And then it happened to him. He began seeing a strange light driving home from work at night. And the light kept coming closer and closer till it passed over his car so low he could have thrown a rock and hit it. And then his neighbors around him in the trailer park began to see the same light overhead too, and they began to call it his friend. And one night a neighbor lady came to his house to borrow a cup of sugar, and when his wife looked out, the craft was making its triangular patterns in the sky out there. And he went to the door, looked over her head, said, "By golly, it is." He said, "I think I'll get my jacket and go out and get a closer look." He put his jacket on, put binoculars over his shoulders, and went out across a little ditch and up on a railroad track to get a better look at it. And he was watching it flying down the Ashley River when it stopped and dropped just like a stone, and thought it had crashed in the river. He was trying to focus it in when it swooped in so close to him and so big, he thought it was going to hit him, and he shied back and caught his foot on the rail and began to fall. He put his arm down to catch the fall, and he didn't fall. He was rising away from the ground, and he looked around him. He's in a beam of blue light going up towards the bottom of the ship. He fainted when they reached the bottom of the ship, and he woke up on an examining table. And his story was a most remarkable story. I followed the developments from that point by telephone and trips back and forth to Charleston to interview him on the new events. The aliens finally brought him a little object, a metal bar with strange symbols on it. They turned out to be star chart symbols describing the planets in his constellation, the correct kind of planets in the correct positions, as you would see it looking from the ground straight up at zenith. And there's no charts to show those stars in those positions, and this guy had no experiences in astronomy at all, didn't even know where a reticulum was. It's in the low southern sky, can't even see it from here. And they turned out to be benevolent little grays that treated him very fine. They were careful not to disturb him or his family. They knew that his wife didn't believe the subject, although she'd been in the car with him when it swooped so low over the car. They stopped the car and got out. He could have thrown his camera and hit it. And his wife saw it close up. She never saw the beings, but he interacted with them a number of times, and he knew that they weren't devils. His church said that they, since they didn't have a Jesus Christ, they certainly were from the other side and the manifestations of the Antichrist. And his church actually began excommunication proceedings. And here's a guy who is the deacon in his church, passes a collection plate, teaches the Sunday school, helps keep the church records. He's so faithful. And he's going to be excommunicated because he's talking to alien grays. But they did. The church proceeded, and his wife at that point told him that he's going to take their little daughter, and he'd never see them again if he didn't get off the horns of the devil. They went to the church and prayed all day, and finally the pastor says, "You're going to have to get rid of all the evidence you've got, all four sets of photographs, all the automatic writing, all the negatives, all the pictures, all the little metal bar, all the things that have any relationship at all with them, or they're going to come back in." So they packaged it up, took it all down, threw it off this big pier in Charleston in the heavy surf, and the waves tore up the package and it floated away. The aliens came back one more time. They apologized for causing such upset in his life. And they said that the little metal bar may have little intrinsic value to you, but it has great value to us. We have given such a recognition to only one other Earth human. Then he felt bad. The contacts were over.
And as far as the metal bar, I don't know if the ETs got it back or not.
They said they successfully recovered and they had it back in their possession.
Right.
But
right.
An interesting thing there, I was in Charleston with Bill on another contact when Lee, my partner in the Swiss case in Switzerland, was at the farm with Billy Meyer, and we were talking on the phone, and he said that day Bill had told me something interesting, and Lee says the Palladians are going to break off communications for a time because they're going to a meeting in Andromeda on affairs concerning Earth. Well, that same afternoon, before I talked to Lee, Bill Herman had told me that the reticulans were going to be absent for about a month because they were going to a meeting in Andromeda on affairs concerning Earth. Same damn thing. And so we had a corroboration of an event that did take place. In both cases, they disappeared. They didn't come back for a month. And then they came back and talked about the meeting. And that was very interesting because...
What did they say about the meeting?
I don't remember what the discussion of the Earth affairs was. But... The Pleiadians were interacting in some way with those little reticulan creatures who were small grays, about less than 4 feet tall.
You know, you mentioned this example with the right-wing Christian there. Yeah, you told me an interesting story once about this Jehovah Witness in Brazil. I think is was.
Oh yes.
The ET alien, I think, kind of humored the Jehovah Witness, right? Or
well, what happened is a man and woman had been were driving from Rio to Belo Horizonte, and they were picked up car and all in the middle of the night. And when they were taken from their craft aboard the ship, they were taken into a room where they were set down on big overstuffed chairs with and metal helmets or helmets were put over their heads with wires coming out of them going to a console. The alien visitor put one over his head the same way, connected to the same console, and then they could talk to each other, and the Earth language converted for the alien's language.
Yeah, it was a translator of some sort.
Yeah. And the man in the car was a Jehovah's Witness minister, and as soon as he sat down in the chair and the alien turned the console on, he began preaching, trying to convert the alien. And the alien sat there with his hands folded in his lap and listened very patiently for almost a half an hour. And the preacher got so hoarse he could hardly talk, still trying to convert the alien. And the alien looked at him when he stopped to take a breath. He says, "Are you through?" And the preacher says, "Of course, can't even talk anymore." And the alien took every point that he raised in his attempts to convert him point by point and successfully argued their true validity to the minister. The minister quit his position as a preacher and went to teaching yoga in Sao Paulo. So the alien converted the preacher.
Instead of the other way around.
Yeah.
So you haven't slowed down much, really, Wendell. I see you around. Saw you in Laughlin. What's next in your agenda? Where are you going next?
Well, they're having a reunion out at Giant Rock in another couple of weeks.
And you're going to be there?
And I'm going out there. They invited me to come out and talk to them there.
Oh, we were there last year. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I knew a lot of people that were going to Giant Rock. You know, I've known a lot of these people for a long time. I'm 84 years old.
Well, yeah, and that was back in the 50s when you first got interested. And I guess I actually might have been interested in 47, 45, because we talked about the Nazi record at one time.
Yeah. So I'm taking a case that they never heard of out there. Years ago, a young man, he's older than me, he's almost my age now, Oswaldo Gonzalez, was a young man, and he began having contacts with extraterrestrials unexpectedly, and they began to give him rendezvous points to meet them. And they gave him a rendezvous location one time, and he drove there. And he got there in the middle of the night, so he crawled in the back seat of his car, was going to sleep until morning, and then see what happened. When he woke up in the morning, he was awakened by a commotion of cars pulling in all around him and people outside, and he got up and got out of his car and says, "What's going on?" And they said, "We're coming here for the Giant Rock Convention." He was at Giant Rock, is where the rendezvous was, and people gathered all morning, and they had a convention. And during the early morning hours of the convention, before it really started, about 11 o'clock in the morning, Oswaldo Gonzalez's craft appeared overhead, over all the people there. And a deputy sheriff hired to maintain order during the meeting was there. He had an official camera with him. He took a picture of the object with his camera. And Bob Short's wife, Shirley, you know Bob.
Yeah,
Shirley,
I know, yeah.
Shirley had her camera with it. She took a picture of it, too. And they both have copies of the same picture that was taken that day of the craft that was visiting or came to visit Oswaldo Gonzalez. So I'm bringing Oswaldo Gonzalez to Giant Rock with me this time.
Hey, fantastic.
He's going to tell his story from the platform. We're going to show the pictures. Shirley Short's going to be there with her picture, and I think Deputy Sheriff Ackerman is probably dead by now, but we'll have copies of his picture, too. So that'll be a surprise to the visitors to Giant Rock.
And they can go over to our conference section, and they'll see Retro Conference 2, and then click on there and find out more information about the date and everything. That's coming right up here at the end of April.
Yeah.
And it's always that's an interesting place. That road getting out to Giant Rock is something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, how was it back in those days, I wonder?
Oh, it was even harder then.
Oh, really?
It was an unimproved road, yes.
Okay. Wendell, it's always a pleasure talking to you. You've got a chance to plug your next event, and we do urge people to go to the Retro Conference. This is always fun. We had a lot of fun there last year.
There's going to be a lot more this year of the old-timers.
Oh, I know. That's what it made
yeah,
it
you got fun. More than twice as many already registered.
Yeah, great. Great. Thanks very much. We'll be in Roswell from July 4th until that Sunday. The 5th, we'll actually be at the Civic Center with a table, the Jerry Pippin Show. We'll have Jane Swartley there, Roberta Scott, Dr. Rita Louise, and others. Come by and say hello to us. We'll have all kinds of DVDs and even Jerry Pippin Show UFO Files t-shirts, among other things. And a great selection of great DVDs, I must say, including the Phoenix Lights and the Fast Walkers DVD. So we'll see you in Roswell this July 4th through the following Sunday.